From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the May 5th edition of Commodity Week. Well, while there were some serious bumps in the road this week, nearby corn futures managed to stage a late-week rally as the New Orleans basis jumped to a dollar over. Still, new crop corn posted a weekly loss in Chicago. We'll ask if those bids will continue to drift apart today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. During this half hour, we'll thoroughly explore the fate of the South American bean crop. Paula Savante with Rabo Agrifinance is on the line from Argentina. And U.S. expert in the area, Michael Cordonnier, is here too from his office in Hinsdale, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, we're going to start our program just a little bit different this time around because we have a couple of analysts on the phone lines to talk about the South American soybean crop. We'll go to Buenos Aires first, where Paula Savante has been waiting patiently. She is with Rabo Bank International and helps to put together those types of releases that you see from Rabobank that might lower the size of the soybean crop. Those are the latest ones from this year. And we talked to Sterling Liddell out of the St. Louis office, if you listen to our daily program last week, about that particular event. He told me during that he had been urged for quite some time, Paula, by the analyst in South America, and I'm assuming one of these was you, to lower sooner rather than later. Was that the case?
To lower the expectations for crop in Argentina?
Yes.
Yeah, we've been seeing that it's been a season where a lot of things went wrong with the weather. It started with a drought in late December and early January, and when that drought was over and we thought our second crop of soybeans would be better, then we started having excessive rains and very cold temperatures very early on. And so that has also affected our second crop of soybeans. So it's been fairly clear to us that the initial estimates of soybean production, and especially the USDA, has been really slow in lowering their production forecasts for Argentina. But here, it's always been clear that they were going to be lower than what the USDA was publishing.
And your current number for Argentina's production is?
We are currently estimating 43 million tons of soybeans. This is in comparison to last year, where we had just short of 50 million tons.
I was thinking that it was actually 40 million metric tons of soybeans for some reason.
Well, Informa just came out with an estimate of their own of 40 million. We haven't gone that low yet. I've seen low domestic estimates that are between 41 and 42 as the lowest, and we're still staying at 43 because we believe that some of the areas that still need to be collected will not further reduce the average yields that we have right now. Mm-hmm. So we think that 40 is a little extreme. Although, you know, anything might happen, but most of the estimates domestically are hovering around 43.
Let me bring Michael Cordonnier into the conversation from Hinsdale, Illinois. He travels fairly frequently to South America, Argentina, and Brazil, both. and has been, of course, watching the crops fairly closely. Michael, you've been lowering your numbers. Can you give us two numbers, yours and what USDA's current vision of South American and Argentina crop might be?
Well, for Argentina, I have it at 40 million tons, so a little bit lower. And I saw the grain exchange in Buenos Aires came out yesterday, I think it was.
That's correct.
And they brought it down 2 million down to 41. It's going to be in the low 40 million ton range. And I think the problem, as she said, the problem was just right. You know, the problem's early on. And now they had some dry weather up north and the colder weather down south. So that is, you know, an ongoing concern in Argentina. If you don't mind, I'll just talk a little bit about Brazil, too, where we're on South America.
Please do.
I have the Brazil estimate for soybeans at 65 million tons. Now, they had the same sort of weather concerns in Rio Grande do Sul and Paraná and southern Brazil, and also some up in northeastern Brazil. So their crop is much smaller than anybody thought going into the season as well. And I think one of the problems we're going to have out of South America is the carryover supplies. In Brazil, for example, at the current export pace and crush pace, they could have very, very tight supplies of soybeans before the new crop becomes available, which won't be until January. So Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay all have very short crops, very tight supplies, and I think it's just going to push some more export business back to the United States.
That was a question, Paula, that I was going to ask you when you take a look.
Sorry to say this, I can't hear what he said.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that.
Do you want to give me a summary?
Oh, sure. In essence, he says he believes that your crop is short enough, you're not going to make it to the next year, and that exports will be forced to the United States.
Yeah, that's definitely true, yeah.
And can you talk about the export market from Argentina, where it generally goes? I believe it's bean meal for the most part, but how does it make its way through the distribution system around the planet?
Yeah, in Argentina, usually we, in a typical year, we will export as beans without crushing them. We will export from 10 to 20% of our production. And the full beans without crushing will usually go to China for them, and they would crush it domestically. That percentage has been increasing because China is buying more of the beans, the full beans, instead of buying the crushed products. So the full beans will go to China generally. Then what we do is about 60 to 70% of the crop gets crushed, and that gets crushed into oil and meal. The oil gets exported as well. Most of it gets exported to India and China and a variety of other countries in the Middle East. And some of it is also used for biodiesel, which in turn is either exported to Europe or consumed domestically in Argentina. And the soy meal, almost, I would say, over 80% of our soy meal goes to the European Union, and they use it as feed.
Paula, one of the main things we've been talking about with some of our clients in the past couple months has been this new crop corn and bean ratio, and new crop beans being, you know, relatively high compared to corn. And given, you know, some of the acreage estimates that we've had for the U.S., how do you think that the current situation is going to affect maybe your acreage ratios down there in Argentina, and what would you be recommending to your clients based upon, you know, the profitability of beans versus corn?
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things in Argentina is that it's slightly different than the U.S. in terms of the relative profitability of both crops. And usually the safer crop in Argentina and the crop towards which farmers will tend to go as a safety crop is going to be soybeans. And so aside from the price ratio, which I will talk about in a second, but just considering the fact that we are going to be ending this year as a relatively bad year in terms of a bad harvest, and farmers next year will want to be on the safer side, we are expecting an increase in soybean acreage in Argentina to the detriment of corn. Now, if on top of that you add the different price ratio, then it becomes more favorable even for soybeans in Argentina here. The cost of actually planting them is much lower than planting corn in Argentina. and therefore the margin at the current price ratio is much higher for the soybean.
I guess this would be for either one of you. Could you discuss a little bit the price levels of your domestic prices, corn and beans for that matter, versus what the U.S., say, FOB China, which is really the big buyer here in the market?
Okay, I'll talk about Brazil for a second. There's record soybean prices all over Brazil. Brazilian farmers have never seen prices this high. I'll give you an example. They're selling almost 60 reals per sack in some of the southern Brazilian ports, which are levels never seen before. So it's not only the board price that's advantageous, but in Brazil, the currency is weakening very quickly. Brazil is going to be dropping its interest rates, so that has weakened the currency, and that puts money directly into farmers' pockets in Brazil. And I think the Brazilian soybean area next year will go up 3 to 6%. And if we transition into an El Nino by summertime, that usually brings good weather to South America, and that would bring pretty good yields again. And I think Brazil could do 77 to 80 million tons of soybeans next year compared to 65 million this year. So Brazil, at least, is the farmers are very anxious for the next crop. The seed sales for next year's crop is at a record pace. They've already sold out of many varieties, many popular varieties. And the farmers just are really, really anxious to get started with this new crop with these record prices.
Michael, for the sake of our listeners, so is the U.S. price competitive with Brazil's price in when they have those record prices?
Yes, it is. And I think this year the problem is going to be nobody has very many extra soybeans to sell, so it's going to be a scramble trying to find supplies. Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay are going to be very short. The United States is going to be tight supplies. So it's going to be a real scramble to get soybeans.
Paula, he answered for the Brazilian side of that and suggested there would be a 3 to 6% increase in acreage in Brazil. I know the question was about what pricing was like in Argentina, and then if you could take up what the increase you might think would be coming for that South American nation for the coming crop.
Sure. In terms of prices, the prices in Argentina that the farmer that the producers will receive, as you know, we have export taxes on both soybeans and corn. We have a 35% export tax on soybean and a 23% on corn. And what this does, of course, is it substantially lowers the price that the farmers receive. However, corn also has a quantitative restriction on exports. So this means that there's only a certain volume that is sometimes allowed to be exported, and at some point that export quota is closed, and therefore the export market is not available, and that makes the price go down further. So in general, although we follow, usually prices follow the movements in Chicago or in the U.S. Internationally, they're always at a discount according to the export tax. But soybeans, the relationship with soybean to corn is still favorable to soybeans due to the fact that they do not have restrictions on how much can be exported. And this ties in with what I was saying earlier, that farmers will always prefer to plant soybeans. It's a safer option in terms of price and making sure you have a market to sell it to. And so we are expecting to see, in terms of total acreage in Argentina, probably pretty similar or stable to what it was this year. But in terms of the distribution of that acreage, we are expecting a soybean acreage that is about 10% higher than this year, while corn will probably go down by 15%.
Paula, we're seeing the supply side clearly being reacting to, both with you and Michael's commentary, the supply side's reacting with the high prices. How about the demand side in terms of the EU meal? If we had another double dip led by the European Union, do you have any numbers or can you tell anything yet as far as that elasticity of what we would lose in terms of demand at this point?
I don't have those numbers. I do know that is there are several concerns on the demand side also going forward, because there's if Europe would have a continued recession, and that would decrease their imports on soy meal. That has had very strong effects on crushing margins here, and that's something we've already seen earlier in the year. It's picked up recently, but earlier in the year, I mean 2011, I'm sorry. So that would be a concern. And we're also having concerns in terms of biodiesel exports, and that's all part of the same production chain for us. So the fact that demand could decelerate either from Europe or even China is always a strong risk on the demand side that would be, you know, big downside for prices.
Paula, thank you so much. I'm going to let you go at the moment, and we do appreciate you being with us, okay?
Thank you for having me.
Paula Cervante is with Rabo Agri Bank in Buenos Aires.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. Much-needed rains returned to central and western Illinois this week. Rainfall amounts range from 1/2 to 3 inches in that region. Amounts were a little less in northeastern Illinois. Unfortunately, far southern Illinois received less than 1/2 inch of rain. Average high temperatures for the week range from the mid-80s in southern Illinois to the 70s in central Illinois to the 60s in northern Illinois. Average low temperatures for the week range from the 50s in southern Illinois to the 40s in central and northern Illinois. The Water Survey maintains soil moisture probes at 19 sites in Illinois. The good news is that the soil moisture levels recovered nicely at 2, 4, and 8 inches across central and northern Illinois, thanks to the widespread rains. Meanwhile, soil moisture levels have declined in southern Illinois in the last 2 weeks. We will be in for a very active weather pattern through Monday with a chance of thunderstorms every day. Expected highs will be in the 80s and lows in the 60s for much of the state. The potential rainfall amounts through Monday range from 1 to 1.5 inches in the southern half of the state, and from 1.5 to 3 inches in the northern half of the state. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the May 4 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason in the studio with us, Matt Bennett, Bill Mayer, and Mike Zuzulo. On the phone line, of course, is Michael Cordoniere of Soybean and Corn Advisor. Let's go through some of the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for the week. We won't give you the high and the low, but just the closes. May wheat down 38.5 cents, July down 40.5. It settled at 609.5. The May corn at 662.25 was up 9.25 cents for the week. December at 524.25, down 14.5. And the May soybeans this week settled 21.75 lower. That finished at $14.75. November at 13.66 3/4, up 4.75. The live cattle pit finished the May contract, rather June contract, at 115.37.5. It was up $2.52.5. The feeders in the May at 152.55, up 3.77.5. And lean hogs were down $5.70 at $79.80 for the week. Let's talk about one thing really quickly with our panelists in studio, and maybe each of you can answer this. New Orleans jumped to a dollar over at the end of the week. Why did it happen?
Well, I think there's a variety of reasons, but I think one of the things you have to keep in mind is what the spreads are doing. And, you know, I don't want to go into anything lengthy, but I can assure you once we went to the from the May to the July, there were some implications as far as deliveries go that people were definitely not wanting to take. And so it's definitely changed the complexity of what the basis is doing.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM. A different question for you, Bill Mayer. The combined export sales figure for the week was really big, the largest one-day number, I think, in 21 years, as I saw reported. Can that kind of pace continue for corn?
I think we could. I think that may be one reason that we had that basis pushed down at the Gulf is some new export business coming in. Yeah, we've had more sales in the last 10 days announced than I can remember in a long time. I think the other thing that's going on we got to be aware of, just because of the fact that it could add some volatility, is going into this morning, I think there was 9,000 open contracts in the May. We got a little bit of a squeeze going on there, and I think that could continue to cause some volatility in the markets, although the cash grain is not being bid off of the May contract right now.
Yeah, and for you, Mike, can we switch to wheat very quickly? Because the Kansas tour finished up 49.1 bushels to the acre. That's 0.1 better than the record, which was set quite some time ago, I think in 98. Does it make too much difference to you?
Yeah, it really does, because a soft red crop may be just as good, Todd. I think that's where we may be challenging the 2008 production levels of almost 2.5 billion bushels. And that's probably the biggest reason why corn is going to have to maybe struggle here in the next 20 or 30 days. But like Matt and Bill said, I see this corn market is starting to develop like last year at this time, where the feed sector, the ethanol sector are starting to compete with the export market, and it seems like they're all running. Friday, one of my contacts told me that the ethanol markets were starting to kick into gear in Cedar Rapids, that the basis was starting to jump 50 over on ethanol margins getting better. Sounds like to me, like June of last year, we're starting to see the domestic and the export market fight each other.
Do you suppose the price of corn can continue to rally?
Like I said, with wheat, it's tough. With wheat, it's tough. With the early wheat harvest, it's tough for me.
We've got to feed wheat. I mean, that's bottom line. We got to feed some wheat this summer. We got to feed some new crop corn. But I guess I think myself that this week we kind of did some work and we found some values here. I guess I kind of think that the corn and wheat and beans, all three, probably kind of found the top and the bottom there for a little while anyhow.
I think moving forward, you have to keep in mind, I guess, the acreage on corn, and I think it's going to kind of be a bit of a wait. And I guarantee you that there's two different markets here between cash and the new crop coming on. But to me, I think that unless we see exports continue, and I hope that they do the way that they have, and then you know, as long as we go ahead and chew through 95 million bushel on you know, on ethanol every week, I don't think that there's any question we're going to see some tightness. But I want to keep in mind that you know, we're going to be looking at some pretty early bushels this year, too.
Mr. Cordonnier, let's continue our conversation with you. Can you take us through your acreage figures for the United States, please?
Yes. Well, I think the big change is going to be soybeans. And I think that March planting intentions number is a low number for soybeans. And we could go maybe two and a half million acres above that. And it's almost all, I think, going to be a double crop. In eastern Kansas, in the softwood winter wheat areas, the wheat crop is 2 or 3 weeks earlier than normal. And with these soybean prices, I think we'll go see a lot of extra soybean acres, especially double crop. For the corn, I'm kind of sticking with the number they had in the March planting intention. It might go up a little bit because I think the whole general acreage pie, so to speak, is going to go up 2 or 3 million acres with a combination of various factors, you know, plowing up some hay and pasture and a lot of more double crop soybeans and other factors. So the pie gets bigger, but I think soybeans are going to get the most of the increase.
Okay, Michael, if you're looking at the acreage, and then, of course, we're looking at some pretty tight situations, you know, whenever you're talking about South America, and that we may go ahead and export a fair amount more beans. Pricing-wise, what would you be looking at for producers? I mean, as far as advice goes, you know, we've got pretty historically high levels, you know, $13.50 right out of the field for harvest, fall harvest price on beans. You know, what's your recommendation?
Well, my recommendation is to, I'd make some sales, of course, but we're always going to have a weather problem in the United States. There's just bound to be one at some point. And, in fact, in South America, they're waiting for this weather scare as well. These things are so tight, I think we're going to stay at very good prices. We're going to spike up depending on the weather situation. Now, I would make some sales before maybe, say, the July 4th weekend, because historically we get to around the first, second week of July, and then the meteorologists start talking about the weather for August already, and then we got a pretty good idea of what might happen. So certainly they're going to stay strong. I would wait for a price spike, make, get some sales on the books, of course, but it's going to be a volatile summer. It could be very interesting.
What's your general take on the conditions at this point in time? Any problem areas, anything we need to be watching?
Well, I was a little bit concerned about some dryness in Illinois and Indiana, but they had some good rain there this week. We still need to recharge some subsoil in the northwestern Corn Belt, but they got some good rain up there too. So we're not quite as advanced as what I thought we would be. I think the corn crop is about a week, maybe 10 days ahead of normal. If you'd asked me at the end of March when it had 80-degree temperatures, I would have said we'd be more advanced than this. But it's still good. It's off to a good start. I think we'll have very good plant populations, very good stands. And I'm plugging in right now a corn yield of 161 to 162, but I'm leaning to raise that. And we'll see when it all gets planted and how the moisture goes. And if we get into an El Nino, like some people are saying by, say, July, that generally brings good conditions for our U.S. growing, for the U.S. corn crop. And I think we could look at a pretty darn good corn yield this year if things keep going this way.
Michael, back on the demand side for beans, the Financial Times had a nice article this week about China becoming a copper exporter, and that just got my wheels turning about their pork production being up and down, not being able to really get rid of their disease problems. Bottom lining it for us, what number are you using for Chinese imports for 2012, and what would be a worst-case scenario on the demand side right now for you?
Well, I think I would put it in the upper, that'd be 56, 57 million tons for soybeans. China's always so opaque. You never quite know what to expect, but if you look back at the end of the year, it's always more than the year before. And we see this for a long historical period for China with soybeans. I think we'll start to see it as well for corn. So Chinese are very good at, downplaying the market, talking down the market by saying they don't need many supplies, but they end up, buying more and more and more. I think it's just going to continue to increase. Just as an example, in Brazil, for example, there's many Chinese delegations going to Brazil talking about investing in infrastructure and railroads and ports and all that sort of thing. They're sourcing more and more locations for their raw materials, and I think it's going to continue that way.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us today, Mr. Cordonnier. We do appreciate it.
Always my pleasure.
Michael Cordonnier is with Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Our thanks also go to Paula Savante, who is with Rabo Agribank out of Buenos Aires, Argentina. And in studio with us today, Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, Bill Merritt, Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzalo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. That does wrap up this edition of Commodity Week. You can always find us online if you'd like at WILLAG.org. I'm Novi Extensions, Todd Gleason.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.